this is working. Yeah.
Well, if you want a bit of a writing talk, you can, but it'll need to.
No,
I mean, not particularly. I just sort of want to talk a little bit about what we're going to look at this weekend. And but I'm just... Date is the 18th. 18th. Date of the 18th. Just want to begin in a way by just looking at reminding us all, what are we doing here? What's all this about? Poems, songs, angels. And in some ways, what we're doing is paying attention and taking quite seriously our relationship to our lives and our own embodied experience. And that's really the heart of it. So it's interesting, Roberta mentioned this text I'd never heard of, Five-Branched Fig Tree, which I'm the miracle of the internet. I just looked up, and it's extraordinary, because it's a Khmer Buddhist text from Cambodia. I've never heard of it, and it's quite an esoteric text, but it's saying pretty much the same things that are at the heart of our own experience here. It's very unlikely that the Khmer missionaries ever got to Wales, or vice versa. But what we're talking about is something that's quite universal. Because at the heart of all the different exercises that we do, what we do is we pay attention to our senses, pay attention to our experience, and trust what happens when we do that. Now, when we do that, when we pay attention, when we just notice how we are in the moment, we start to notice our body, we start to notice our senses, we start to notice our position in space and our relationship with time. You know, we sit here together in a familiar space, and some of us gathered in this way back in November, and others of us haven't gathered until, you know, 10 months of last June. And that's one aspect of the experience of just sitting together, but of course there's everything else. As we've been telling our stories to each other, other aspects of our experience come in. Now, one of the things that happens as we pay attention to ourselves, pay attention to our bodies, we notice ourselves in space. We notice front, back, left, right, up, down. So we notice inside and we notice inside and out. So we notice there's also a sense of center. So this is the exercise that we've been looking at with the angels and that are connected with the qualities of the elements. So in a sense, if you like Raphael, the angel of the east, the sense of the element of air and breath and new life. Mikael, they related to the south, the warm place, the sun at noon, fiery kind of energy. Gabrielle, the west, place of the setting sun, the place of the ocean, the place of the waters, the place of sort of flowing feeling. Oriel, place of north, earth, darkness as opposed to light. We're touching something there that is part of universal human experience and then gets taken up culturally. And in the center point is the place of stillness and this central axis that's above and below. What's underneath, what's above. One of the sort of meditative things we're going to do this weekend is really look at, is develop this idea of these directions, these angelic beings, and in a way look at the embodiment, if you like, of an inner sanctuary, which is our own sanctuary, that isn't Celtic or Hebrew or Buddhist, but would have elements of all of that, whatever is in us. One of the key things when we look at this, we have to look at is what in this place and what enables us to change and what stops us changing. Well, one of the interesting things is just to think about what's the difference now. We used to meet once a month, more or less, cap in the summer. Now we're meeting just a couple of times a year. What's the difference of meeting less regularly? What happens? Is it easier to do this work, more difficult to do this work? More spacious. Right. That, and in a way, there's something about this of looking at where does this work travel in this, and what is this work for us now? What was the Aaron Trader 2 years? The Aaron Trader is a particular thing we keep bouncing us through the stories but in different territory with it now. It's where does it live in you, and what feeds it, and when you come into your own experience, well, what do you find there?
Let's continue to say something, which is that some of us have been, maybe all of us have been connecting every month.
Yeah.
Well, that seems that that's how the group goes for me, so it doesn't feel like June.
Hmm.
Yes.
Sure.
So we've been together.
Yeah.
We have been together.
Well, we have been together.
There's nothing to say
that. Definitely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure, yeah, definitely. No, obviously on inner levels we've been continuing to work using these forms. So and then there's the different experience of meeting together in the body. So it's both bound. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's continuity and physical kind of meeting. One of the things that it can just be interesting to look at, when we look at continuity or staying with something, is what helps and what hinders, what stops us, what encourages us. And what do we take with us on the journey then? Because so many stuff, so much stuff over the 2 years. Key thing in some ways is what travels with you. When you look over the things that we've looked at, some things you'll find maybe haven't spoken to you when you've left them behind, other things are traveling with you in some ways. Well, in my experience, the thing that we also do inevitably meet is our own resistance to this work. Certainly I do. My resistance to transformation, my resistance to change. Which is somewhere all predicated on the encounter with the unknown. See, it's a powerful, you know, a very powerful story about how we think we're okay with the unknown. But actually, I know that it's deeper, so I'm not, you know. I really start to think about my death as an actuality as opposed to a poetic fiction or as a psychological possibility. I guess, yeah. And that fear is cellular. Right? So I can, you know, I can be okay with it, work with it. But actually, there's something about if I really approach not just my own death, actually, but the death of anything, anybody and anything I care about. I start thinking about Tulip's death. I hope it's not today, because that wipes away for the weekend. But it could be. She's very, very old. You know, there's something, there's a sort of contraction that happens in me. Even though, you know, I grieved the death of many pets in my time there. But it's always particular, it's always new, and it's not that I don't think I will get through it. I don't want it. There's a sort of, no, that's not. And, you know, and immediately if I think of TV dying, I mean, I start bargaining with the universe, so well, she could live another year. And of course, it's always another year, or another day, or, you know. And I'm saying, and in the real, it's not like that, because actually, when particularly in animals or people become ill and die, you go into a process that you're part of. And that process holds you. But the place that this is the place we keep coming back to, right? So this is, what's the difference between us and a Buddha? Now, I don't think it's massive, except the Buddha has eroded, has somewhere deeply diminished, maybe even banished forever completely, that contraction. That cellular shrinking away. Or mostly done that. You know, if you look at the actual stories of the Buddha, he's still working his karma out, even after enlightenment. But something fundamental has happened, so that shift. You know, when you get stories of the Buddha, this is a someone who can welcome experience, opens to experience, and then trusts what happens in that moment. Whose intention and will is somehow free. You know, so a lot of the images you get about the deep experiences of the Buddha, you get this image of freedom, you get this image of openness or something being released. It's like in the poem, The Release of the Prisoner. So something is freed, something that was bound. No longer bound. Now, if we think of the angels for a moment. If we think of the angel of the east, we have this image of new life. Lovely business, healing, new sunrise. At a poetic level and a sort of, even, you know, first level, lovely idea, a new day, don't we? And new life disturbs. You know, painful things can happen. You know what has happened to the little dog. I know the little dog's in your heart felt as well. Maybe. Probably wonders if the dog has died and has come to your spirit. I don't know. But that new life, right, has disturbed your life. And it's lovely and it's disturbed your life. And your grandmother, you know, it comes in, it's disturbing your life. You know, you have to think, of, God, who am I now? I'm not going to do this. And I have to walk the line. I want to support but not take over. Same thing.
What I was with when you said that was just the image of that we've got lots of new things coming up. Soil, I've no idea what they are, but they're coming up.
That's
and there's something
thing.
About the yes. Soil just looks so beautiful. And,
yes, right.
And then suddenly there's something coming up and it does disturb the earth.
Disturbs the earth. Yeah, totally. Yeah, totally. That's a great image, isn't it? Particularly when you're in your garden, because suddenly you thought things were coming up, you didn't even know they were there, necessarily, hidden underneath.
Breaking through a graveyard, new things breaking through,
old things, right? So that they disturb the dead. So you know, so there's a whole, so you know, everything's very double edged. So you know, so that place where you think, oh, lovely new life, illumination. If you look, think of the angel of Michael, illumination, light. Now light is a good thing, but when you see things, you can't unsee them. That also disturbs, that also kind of, And also the other two angels, you know, the sense of flow. Well, actually, flow is scary, I think. You know, the flow of water, the irrigation of things, again, they, you know, that feeds the new things, or the idea, even the idea of purification, of cleansing. You know, you lose something in that. You know, the sort of, you know, the this idea of cleansing and feel, you know, there's that feeling of vulnerability. You know, even it's a silly example. You have a nice shower, okay? You nice hot shower, you come out of the shower, you feel clean. But there's a way in which, if you really pay attention to your senses, there's an openness, there's a vulnerability in that. And it's true also of the place of the angel of earth, where you come into the sense of ground or solidity or depth. Well, then you're here, and being here, got sharp edges, you know, it's like that the earth is almost like diamond, it can, you know, it's strong, it can hold you, but it's kept as well. And of course all these things, these qualities interlock. You know, the nice thing about the angels is that, you know, the sort of, they together, this mandala form, that's why you find it all over the world in different systems, where you can find it in the Khmer esoteric text. You can find it in Hebrew tradition, you find it in Welsh tradition, you find it in Native American tradition. So the details differ according to the culture, but underneath, this is why Jung identified this mandala structure as something that human beings generate as ways of mediating their relationship between themselves and the world they live in. If we're a neurologist, there's probably something by the way the neurological system is configured, and human beings are configured with their five senses and sort of. But the key piece in some ways is this place where things come together at the center of our experience. So as we position ourselves in the center, this is the place where the new life arises, where everything comes together. This is where the new sun appears in the meditation of the angels. A great image in the text that Roberto is referring to of a crystal sphere, a flower. I'm not sure if I'm remembering it correctly, but I just read it briefly. Image of a sort of a crystal sphere of liberation. It's a bit very similar image to the new sun, slightly different language, right? But it's so when we align with these things, come together at the center, something new emerges. We can call it a sun, we can call it a crystal fruit, we can call it a lotus blossoming. There's lots of ways of describing that experience where you are held and centered and starting to free. But in that place, we of course are having to work with the energy of whatever the newness, whatever shape it's arising, and our resistance to and our contraction away from that. Now in Buddhism, we would, you know, you look at this, our reaction, the sort of reactions around that center point. you know, the wish to sort of distance ourselves or control it or dull out so we don't experience it. Because that center point, that point of the new sun or the crystal point, is a place of profound, embodied, connected openness. In the poem, it's that place where water is one water, air is one air, fire is one fierce spark, there is one earth. So at the end, you know, the bits of the poem that really speak to this, really, are the places at the end of the poem where we're looking at, and there's this constant thing of looking at intent and will, and then this experience of openness and connectedness. To become those who know. In the root of the word Buddha is that sort of knowledge, that openness, knowing, you know, the awakeness. The poem's pointed at the same place that any great spiritual tradition is in the end, where you're in touch then with a world of connection. And can we bear that? And how can we bear that? And it is very odd when we start looking into in all kinds of strange coincidences happen. You know, so you mentioning this text I've never heard of, which matches completely where we are this weekend. So that's kind of thing. It's a bit odd. And also, like, in just looking up and, oh, there it is. I think, God, it looks exactly like the things I was going to talk about. And the other just odd thing, it's just occurred to me just at the moment before we break for lunch, is that the fruit of the fig tree, there's this Christian story, Jesus, you know, does this whole thing about cursing the barren fig tree and blessing the fig tree that bears fruit. And again, I'm certain there's no direct connection there, but actually there's a connection there in that moment. You know, the fruit of the fig tree is this crystal fruit of the new sun. And actually, there is something important about bearing fruit. Not literal fruit. And it connects with all different things that everybody's been talking about, right? So it's your work and the sort of Marcella's work, you know, the sort of, you know, the what's the fruit of our work? Otherwise, the fruit of our work is being with death and being with grief and being with those two worlds together. That's part of the fruit. What's the fruit? Well, yes. Well, you are encompassing. Well, partly the fruit comes out of that place of encompassing the margins of the world. Mm-hmm. You know, because the fruit does. You know, the fruit is the fruit of the whole world. Right, that's, if you like, that we gather in the mandala of our lives, and we're doing it slightly ritualistically with the meditation, but actually we're talking about the whole sphere of our lives, bringing things together, being with it, and then the fruit is the fruit of everything that is that has been encompassed.
Yeah,
it's
interesting that it's for this year, I formed in a tree here.
Ah, that's right. Yes,
so yes. They're just little green flowers in the winter.
Right.
And they grow edible things later on. There's quite a lot of what's been called gestation time. And you have to go through the season.
Yes, exactly.
Twice.
So that's really interesting, isn't it? So again, we're with this repetitive, this movement through.
It's a bit like the cauldron for the three drops, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's that's in stirred for a year.
Stirred for a year, exactly. Mm. It's a similar
and,
sort of thing.
And yeah, and maybe space is a couple of hazelnuts and hazelnuts and things have to be frozen, right? And Chloe's got some in her fridge. They need to be frozen before they will germinate.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly. Mm. So there's something really about this whole process that's around the elements, that's around the cycle of life that brings us into fruition. You know, so there's a whole. And of course, fruition, of course, then takes us right into a new cycle again. But it's important to really, you know, I really want to look at this place of fruition. Not because it's special, because every part of the cycle is special, but just because that's kind of where we are today. Finished, I need to go to lunch, but fruition has a great deal to do with this idea of intention and will. Because we intend something, when we begin, we intend. And then we work with this mysterious process that is linked to our embodied wills. And the thing about will is, we can consciously intend all kinds of things. Will is what, in the end, what we do. We discover the activity of our will by noticing what happens to us. And we can get very willful. There's lots of ways of getting willful, and I'm going to do it, maybe I'm going to do this. And we can do that, but actually, and we do that. And that will and intent I'm looking at here that is related to fruition is deeper, because you can't sustain conscious will. Will, deep will, is more an act of alignment with something. And is connected to this process of freeing that all the Buddha and all the great spiritual teachers talk about. You know, for the, you know, the Buddhist myth is quite interesting, I think, around all of this, because he's very willful in the beginning of his story. He develops these very powerful methods that are very important. He develops methods of concentration that he's going to use in and really work with. But he has to find a way to work with it creatively. Having mastered it in a very focused, willful way, he has to find a new way to engage his will and concentration. He has to receive the woman. He has to receive Sujata, the woman who brings him the rice milk. Almost let her feed him, almost become her baby, and then he has to sit under the tree. And sit with the cycle of the elements, sit with the cycle of night and day, and stay with it and keep meeting until the moment of fruition comes. So, we'll look some more at this, but for now, I'll go to lunch. And, it's quite sunny today. It means the Glastonbury cafes will be busy, so it's a good idea not to leave it too late, tempting though it is.
This is what you said earlier.
Yeah.